The Rugby Union Podcast.
Welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union Podcast. My name's Michael Casey and we are looking forward to all of this weekend's autumn international fixtures. I'm delighted to say that join me on the line to pick out all the best bets and preview all of the games is former England prop forward Jeff Burbin. Jeff, how are you getting on?
No, I'm all right. So far we've had a couple of good weeks of rugby. England been a bit unlucky. Wales a bit unlucky as well. You know, they had a good start with Fiji, but not quite so good last week. France finally beating the Wallabies and making everything better for the rest of us, giving us all a bit of hope. Ireland's great start with that game against South Africa. So, you know, everything's all to play for.
Yeah, it certainly is very interesting. You referenced there France's result last week, which whilst it's nice to see one of the Northern Hemisphere sides get one over them from down under, it's a little bit worrying when the French start to hit a little bit of form, because we do know what sort of a unpredictable beast they can be when it's all going well. We'll jump straight into this weekend's actions then, and we'll go chronologically, starting with the game with the Azzurri taking on South Africa. Italy versus South Africa. Italy are 13-2 for victory this weekend at home against South Africa, 1-16. With regards to the handicap, it's a 17-point head start for Italy at 10-11, minus 17 South Africa, the same price. For South Africa then, from the side that beat England, Henk Meyer has made four changes. Loosehead Nayakene's come in. Or change at tight end as well. So both props change with Kone Oosthuizen. He's come in. And I think Goosen will swap with Willie LaRue at fullback, as well as Tabobo Mahoje at seven. So a couple of changes for the South African squad. But Jeff, they're taking on an Italy side who defeated at home to Argentina last week. I mean, some may say a little bit unluckily, but still outscored by 2-0. They gave up a losing position. Could this be a cakewalk for South Africa?
I think it will be, in all honesty. I think that Italy were looking for last week's game as their major one. That game against Argentina should have been the game that they won. It was a very close thing. We did say it would be close. I thought it had come down on the Italian side, given that they were playing at home. This is going to be a hard afternoon for them. To be honest, I think, as usual, the bookies have got it about right. I think that the South African side, despite the fact they're resting a few players to play against this Italian side, will run out of winners. They'll use this as an ideal practice to try the strength and depth of their squad.
Yeah, and it's not as if South Africa have done a New Zealand from last week and completely overhauled the side. Two changes at prop, and the two changes of reference are just four changes to the starting lineup. 17 points then, Jeff. Do you think it could be around about that mark or more?
I think it might be a little bit more. I think the South Africans, you know, if they get themselves going, they've got a bit of confidence out of that game against England last week. I can think this could probably be up in the 20s, probably about 24 points.
We do have winning margin live available as well, 21 to 25 points, which would fall into that category of 24 points that Jeff just mentioned. That's a bet at 5-1, so a decent price available about South Africa winning by 21 to 25 points. The second game of Saturday afternoon, we are still awaiting prices for, but this game is going to come from Kilmarnock. We have Scotland taking on Tonga on the 4G. It's the first, I believe, Tier 1 international fixture that's been played in Kilmarnock. And I mean, Scotland going to their fixture against Tonga, the handicap looking like it's going to be around about 14 points. As I say, we'll skirt over this one until we have prices. Vern Cotter has made a couple of changes. I know, for example, Jeff Cross has been selected into the starting lineup, but by and large, it's a squad with a semblance of the squad that played so well against New Zealand last week. Jeff,
Well, Scotland should win this, to be honest. They've got a few changes because of the injuries, the battering they took last week against New Zealand. It's made their board in four changes. They've had to move people around. They've brought Visser back. Quite a good player, Visser. He was unlucky to be out of the side for as long as he was, I think. And he'll look to see this as an opportunity. They've put Lamont in the midfield, who usually plays on the wing, Sean Lamont. So There's been a bit of change around. Cotter's had to do that because of the bashing, but Tonga will be a physical side, but they shouldn't live with the way Scotland are at the moment. Scotland are playing with confidence. The Gray brothers are working well in the line-out for them, and they're making the scrum work well. The Islanders always struggle with powerful fast forwards, and Scotland have got some powerful fast forwards now. So it's I can see this being very much a chance for some of the old stages like John Beattie to have a nice little run around and get out there and put some points on the ball for Scotland.
Yeah, I think points could be something to look at. Keep an eye on the point spread live as that market arises, because obviously Tonga, known for their free-flowing style of rugby, they scored 40 against the USA at King's Home last week. Of course, the USA's defence probably not comparable to Scotland's, particularly in the form that they're in, but perhaps something to bear in mind.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, you know, when the prices come in, if there's a good price up to about 15 points, I think Scotland are good for at least that.
Fair enough to say. Line suggesting it's going to be around 14 points in the handicap, so have a look at that then. Next up then, Jeff, I think the game I'm looking forward to most this weekend, from Ireland, we have Ireland versus Australia. This kicks off at 4:30. Ireland, arguably the form horse of the Autumn Internationals. I know they made hard work of it in the first half against Georgia, but once they went down to 14 men just before half-time, the writing was on the wall. They ended up winning 49-7. They've mixed up the side quite notably from last week. It's a much similar side to the one that beat South Africa so impressively a fortnight ago. With regards to changes then, Gordon Darcy returns to the side. He accompanies Robbie Henshaw in midfield for the injured Rory Payne. So Darcy goes straight in at inside centre. And the other change, it sees Rory Best back in at hooker in place of Sean Cronin. Apart from that, an unchanged side for Ireland. With regards to Australians, they give a debut to Henry Spate, a player who's impressed me in Super Rugby. He's had to wait a little bit of a time for his debut since becoming qualified to play for the Australians. He replaces Joe Tamani. Other changes from last weekend from the side that narrowly lost to France for Australia. See Sam Carter, he'll come in place of James Horwell. Luke Jones in place of Sean McMahon. Matt Tamua in for Christian Lelia-Fano as well. I'm going to put my opinion out there, Jeff, and I'll see how you, what you think of it. I think Ireland are a good value bet to win this one at 8-11, 6-5 Australia.
No, I think so as well. I think that Ireland are playing with a lot of confidence. They've got a good side, you know. And when you look at the fact that they're putting out a very good side here, you know. Paul O'Connell's there playing for them. Rory Best back at hooker for them is always good news. But that back line really does have a look of familiarity about it. Henshaw's making that, hopefully trying to make that 13 spot his own. He's replaced the great Brian O'Driscoll. But good to see Gordon Darcy back in there. You know, everyone thought he was going to be out of it. But injuries allowed him back in, and I'm sure he'll have a great game. They've got fantastic wingers with Beau and Zeebo playing. You know, this is a very, very, very good Irish side, and they're playing with confidence. Schmidt has made them really tick at the moment, and he gave the confidence early in his career to Sexton, and Sexton is rewarding with some great displays. You know, he's up as the only Northern Hemisphere player in the IRB Player of the Year award. So Jonathan Sexton is currently the hottest fly half in the Northern Hemisphere, and this is a great game and a great stage for him to show his talents against one of the best sides. And I think Australia, you know, France beating Australia have shown that it is possible. They played a very strong forward game against them. The Irish will play a very strong forward game against the Australians, and the Irish pack are there or thereabouts, led by O'Connell. I think it will be a close game, but I think the Ireland will just have enough to win this.
-2 on the handicap then. Ireland -2 at 10-11. I just want to go back to some of the points you made there. I think Smith has done a sensational job. Of course, Ireland now up to third in the world rankings. Of course, current Six Nations champions. They'll be defending that title in February, and I'm sure there'll be few writing them off out of hand anyway. And you know, I think Smith's come in and looked at the side last year to the Six Nations, and you thought, okay, this is the final hurrah for so many of these players. You mentioned Brian O'Driscoll. I mean, Darcy in the side still today, but towards the twilight of his career, and many other sort of long-standing professionals. But, you know, this isn't an aged Ireland side by any stretch. Of course, Robbie Henshaw, we mentioned Rory Payne, who's not in the side because of injury, but the likes of Reece Ruddock, who've come into the side and injected a bit of fresh enthusiasm and youth. And, you know, this is an Ireland side that could be good for a couple of years to come.
Yeah, slightly worrying that, isn't it? Eh?
Yeah.
Particularly with the World Cup only a year away. Yeah, they are. They're playing some good rugby as well. They've got a very good mix of age and experience and youth. Probably a better mix than England have got, to be honest. And I think that in keeping the likes of Paul O'Connell there, and you know, Paul's now 35, isn't he? He's probably got another couple of years in him. He'll probably see this World Cup as his swan song. But he's playing at his best rugby. He's producing some of his best rugby. He's always been a tower of strength for the Irish. He's been a go-to man. And losing a player like O'Driscoll, but then getting Robbie Henshaw stepping into that role, it's really working well for Ireland. And Schmidt has obviously blooding the right players at the right time. I honestly think that Ireland are going to have a very successful autumn international series. This game against Australia, they'll be up for this after last week. They rested a few players. They still produced the result that they wanted. Everything's going well for Ireland at the moment. So 7 to 10 points is my reckoning.
7 to 10 points. So the 6 to 10 points winning margin live. This bet available under the winning margin tab is 11 to 2. I do like that. I think also alternative handicaps might be something to look at the moment. The line is minus 2. Ireland at 10 to 11, but I think if and when more handicaps are available, and they will certainly go live in play, if not pre-game, I could be tempted to look at Ireland winning that by more than just the 2 points. I've put down in my notes, Jeff, I've put Ireland by 8 points. So that's,
well, not far off then, are we? We're not too far disagreeing. I mean, you know, the Australians, they brought Curtly Beale back onto the bench and people like that, but they still lack that real oomph up front. And I think as good as their backs are, once they get put under pressure up front, it kind of disjoints their game. We saw that last week against France. Yes, it was a very close call, but ultimately it was the French forwards that really took the sting out of the Australian game.
Yes, so fingers crossed an Ireland win. Then Ireland minus 2 points, 10 to 11. On to the first of the evening's games, and we are over to Cardiff. We have Wales taking on New Zealand. Wales have done little to nothing to put to bed the argument that they just can't do it against the Southern Hemisphere sides. Of course, we saw them lose out to Australia in week one by 28 points to 33. Swapped at the side a little bit for Fiji, but still a very unconvincing 17-13 win. Credit to Fiji for sticking on in there and playing some decent rugby, but I think most people would have expected a bigger margin of a victory for the Welsh. With regards to the side and the changes that have been made, Jonathan Davies is the only swap to the Welsh side that lost to Australia. So if we're looking at the, you know, the perceived first team, the one that they put out against Australia, it's Jonathan Davies who comes into midfield. He will partner Jamie Roberts, and George North will go to his natural position on the wing. With regards to the Kiwis, and they've made 10 changes from last week. Obviously, 12 changes from the side that beat Scotland last week. So almost a complete overhaul, much more similar to the side that beat England. Interestingly, Beauden Barrett starts at 10. Beauden Barrett's a player who I've followed his career quite closely since his time in the ITM Cup with Taranaki. Very impressive young fly half. It's annoying this, you know, you think New Zealand and these just seem to have very impressive young, doesn't matter what position, 1 to 15 coming through the ranks in a machine-like fashion, but there's no place for Dan Carter or Aaron Cruden, even on the bench. And interestingly, what a remarkable record this is. Richie McCaw wins his 100th cap as a captain. And of his 99 games so far, Jeff, 87 have resulted in victories.
Yeah, he's one hell of a player, isn't he? The big change for the All Blacks, though, is putting Ben Smith as fullback. You know,
yeah, of course.
You know, that's been a bit of a shocker there, really, because Israel Dagg would be classed as one of the world's best fullbacks and best counter-attackers, but they put Ben Smith there. So
no one told Johnny May that when he ran past him, did he?
No, keep it quiet. But, you know, you look at it and you see this All Black side, and they put Sonny Bill Williams in there, obviously to face against the threat of Roberts. So two big men running each other. Comrade Smith versus Jonathan Davies. Well, Jonathan Davies just back from injury, playing a lot of good rugby down there for Claremont over the past few weeks, but injured for the last couple, so been out and about. But, it's difficult to say that, and I don't like saying this, it's difficult to say that Wales won't be on the end of a hiding, to be honest. They're
it's
not playing good
rugby. Jeff, you've said that with a smile on your face. I can see that all the way from our studio in Leeds.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to say, in all honesty, I expect Wales to produce a better game than we've seen them play in the past 2 weeks. You know, even the Australia game was disappointing from a Welsh point of view. But I think that Gatland will expect his troops to actually produce something. You know, you play the All Blacks. It's a special occasion for you as a player. It's the intensity of the game. You raise your game to play, and I think Gatland will want his troops to actually put on a show for the Welsh spectators. Sadly, I can't see him beating them. I can't see him beating them simply because the All Blacks have rested players properly last week. They knew that it was going to be a relatively easy game against Scotland.
Probably harder than they anticipated in the end.
It probably was, but you know, it was still a very, very much a second team. I mean, what is the surprise is that they haven't put the likes of Cruddens on the bench or Carr on the bench, and they're looking at Colin Slade. I mean, they really are running through all the, if you like, variations of fly half that could possibly happen. I think they've been dreading the fact that in previous World Cups, they've always ended up with an injury to fly halves, and that's cost them the chances of playing in the World Cup final. And so they're running through every possible combination. And Colin Slade's played a few times for them in that 10 jersey. He's on the bench. It's going to be an interesting game. I expect that it will be a bit closer than we probably anticipate. I can see it being a bit more than it was against England. England were, if you like, blessed a little bit by that penalty try at the end. But I would expect New Zealand to win this game by 10 points.
OK, well, the handicap's 13, so perhaps Wales plus 13 points at 10 to 11. You mentioned all the half, the fly half changes, but I mean, to have Dan Carter, Aaron Cruden, Beauden Barrett and Colin Slade as your options at fly half, it really just does show how far ahead of a lot of other teams that New Zealand are with regards to the depth of squad. I will run through that full New Zealand side you mentioned. Ben Smith in for Israel Dagger at 15. Charles Pitua out on one wing in the midfield. Conrad Smith and Sonny Bill Williams. Julian Surveyor, who came off the bench versus Scotland last week and made a pretty much immediate impact on the left wing. Beauden Barrett and Aaron Smith at 9 and 10. Kieran Reid, Richie McCaw and Jerome Kano in the back row. Sam Whitelock, Brodie Retallick as lock. And up front, Owen Franks, partners Dane Coles and Wyatt Crockett. So, closer, you think the Welsh, whilst they may not have enough for victory, can make a fist of this one. So, Wales plus 13 points at 10 to 11, Jeff?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're saying they'll make a fist of it. I think they'll do a bit better than make a fist of it. I think the New Zealanders will always bring the best out of any team. And this Wales team does have some great runners in it. You know, we've got George North, obviously there, Alex Cuthbert, who is a talented player. You know, Jonathan Davis has been much missed. We always talk about Jamie Roberts and the size players, but Jonathan Davis is a very skillful player for the Welsh. And when he plays in that midfield role, he does open up opportunities for those wingers. So, yeah, the Welsh side will play a lot better than they've played in the last 2 weeks. Sadly, it won't be good enough.
Okay, so maybe a bit of a recommendation. A gingerly made recommendation for the Welsh to keep it close. Plus 13 points available at 10 to 11. Then at 7 p.m, we head to HQ and it is England versus Samoa. Jeff, you said before we started recording, if only England had this game first, you know, before the tests against New Zealand and then South Africa, perhaps we could have managed to win at least one of the games. There's been some interesting selections made by Stuart Lancaster. Owen Farrell hasn't had the most fantastic of tours to date, yet he hasn't dropped. We'll go through the England side then. So Mike Brown continues at 15. Anthony Watson gets his second start on the wing. Brad Barrett at outside centre, and he is accompanied by Owen Farrell, who moved to 12 for today's game. Interestingly, he replaces Kyle Eastmond. There's a change at fly half, of course, so with Farrell at 12, we've got George Ford of Bath. He comes in at fly half. Ben Youngs replaces Danny Kerr at 9. Up front, it's Joe Marler. Rob Webber in for Dylan Hartley. Dave Wilson, Atwood, Courtney Laws, James Haskell, Chris Robshaw, and Ben Morgan replacing Billy Vunipola. And, of course, James Haskell, he is in place of, it would be Wood, wouldn't it? He's coming in place of at six. So a mixed side for England. I guess the argument being that they'd be expected to beat Samoa regardless, so they can change it up. But, you know, there's been cries made in the sort of general media and maybe the non-rugby specific media. It's like, well, why can't they just drop Owen Farrell? He's not been playing well. Why have we moved him to 12? I think, yeah. I've got to be honest, looking at it, I think Owen Farrell, Brad Barrett is England's midfield pairing. It hardly excites me, Jeff.
It doesn't excite me either. Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. You know, there is this old-fashioned view that that you need a ball player in that 12 position, and it has been tried before where we've had two fly halves on the field and you can split up your attack so that you put one of your fly halves on either side of the scrum, means you can go in either direction, and you're more likely to get the ball in the winger's hands. And one of the aspects that we've been complaining about and looking at over the past few weeks is that our wingers haven't had the ball often enough. Now, Owen Farrell coming into that 12 role is partly because Billy 12-Trees is recovering from injury. I expect that we'll see that 12-Trees will get on the field at some point. The big thing about the Samoans is we know how they're going to play. It's going to be physical. It's going to be straight running. It's going to be head-eye tackling. It's going to be aggressive. It's, if you like, what surprises me is that he's kept Owen Farrell actually on the field. If you're looking at it and you're saying that Owen Farrell's not been playing well, which he hasn't, in all honesty, you would have expected that he would have been dropped to the bench, because this is one of those games when you have a person who's not playing confidently, the Samoans will attack that area and they will be physical and they will come back to haunt you. So Owen Farrell, this is very much a gamble by Stuart Lancaster, I think. And everyone says, is there nepotism? Isn't there nepotism? I don't think there is, but I think there's a degree of we need to have Owen on the field somewhere because of his goal kicking. But, you know, I'm not sure it's the right thing. I have to say that I do think England will win no matter what. I think there's enough talent in that line. Hopefully we'll see a bit more of what Anthony Watson can do, and also what Johnny May can do. I hope to see the ball move to them a bit more than we've seen it in the last 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll see Mike Brown get the opportunity to counter-attack. But it will be our forwards that dominate and win this game. The Samoans, like all the Islanders, are great with the ball in their hands. They're great at running around the field. They're not too good at doing the bump and grind stuff up front. So, you know, with Marler, Weber coming in, Weber is a bit more of a scrummager than Hartley. It's got to be said. He's certainly gets in there and makes things happen. So this is a very good front row from England. It should give us the platform to be able to release the likes of Haskell, Courtney Laws running, and Ben Morgan. We saw Ben Morgan rampaging all over the pitch last week. Hopefully these boys will get the opportunity to play against Australia next week, rather than it just be a case of resting the Vinopolas and the Hartleys for next week's game.
Yeah, certainly be good to see some of the boys put their hands up and claim, you know, state their claim for a place against Australia. Betting wise, Jeff, England 1-20 to win it, Samoa 8-1. England are minus 18 points on the handicap. Do you think that's reasonable? Do you think it could be more than that, less than that?
You know, if England get a hit, they could get up more. But I think reality is this Samoan side, they always play with pride, Samoa. There's been talk of strikes because they're not being paid as much as the English players. But I think the reality is that the Samoans will want to get out there and prove a point and say, you know, yes, the England players may be on 15 grand a man. We may only be on $1,000, $2,000 each. But look at how we can play. And, you know, from that point of view, I wouldn't be surprised if this was a 10 to 15 point win for the England side.
Okay, Samoa plus 18 at 10 to 11. We have winning margin lines for this game as well. And England by 6 to 10 points, 15 to 2, 11 to 15, 13 to 2. So perhaps Dutch stakes across the two there. You mentioned, obviously, the Samoa Union, well, the Samoan team in arguments with the Union about payments and everything else. But on the back of the two defeats so far, Jeff, we'll just go this quickly. There's been rise, you know, the questions about Lancaster's coaching and coaching staff. There's been questions about, are this England team going to be good enough going to the World Cup? You know, obviously a home World Cup that there's been plenty of hype and plenty of expectation about thus far. I think maybe a little unjustly, I know obviously, you know, you don't want to go into a tournament having, I think you referenced last week, the likes of South Africa, the likes of New Zealand, knowing that they can go to Twickenham and win. But I just feel that there is still more to come from England.
Yeah, the problem is, will it come quick enough?
Well, yeah, of course.
That's the issue. The issue is that we're still experimenting. If you look at this, back line, by putting Owen Farrar out there, this is an experiment. He could have done this earlier in this championship. You know, arguably, if he was going to experiment, which he's doing in this game, why just save it for the Samoa game? You know, you could have started Ford against South Africa with Farrell. You could have started Ford, you know, against New Zealand, or you could have brought them off the bench a bit quicker and kept Farrell on the field.
So perhaps not being brave enough in the big fixtures, Jeff?
Well, he hasn't, no. And in that sense, you know, he's probably done a disservice to the squad. You look at the England side and you say, yes, they are a good side. You know, they've just lost to the best team in the world by 3 points. And again, last week, a 3-point loss against South Africa, the side that beat the best team in the world. So, you know, England's losing margins over the past 2 weeks have been 6 points in total, you know. So they are getting there, but we need some consistency. And one of the aspects about this England team, again, it's showing changes. Again, there's inconsistency. We need consistency going forward. Yes, rest players against teams like Samoa. Hopefully, though, the players like Ben Morgan will see themselves not as someone who comes in when Billy Vindepoel is being rested. He will want to see himself as a first choice number eight. Rob Webber will want to see himself as that first choice hooker. So hopefully Lancaster will give these players, the Morgans and the Webbers of this world, the chance to run out next week as a first choice player rather than just as a replacement. I think he needs to do that to make statements for these players. There's a bit of, as much as we've got to praise Lancaster for what he's done in terms of team building, in terms of recognition of what the shirt is, there seems a bit of uncertainty in the players' minds as far as their positions within the team. And he needs to clarify that if he's going to have a successful side going forward.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think that whatever happens in this game with Samoa, so even if it's a 1-point win, if it's a 30-point win, the assessment of the autumn for England is going to hang massively on next weekend's game and next weekend's results.
It's all about next weekend. Yeah. It's all about next weekend. Next weekend's game is England's World Cup final before the World Cup. They need to win that game. They need to be, apart from anything else, because Australia are in their pool.
Yeah,
They'll face Australia.
And Wales.
And Wales, but we'll know how they play against Wales when we face them in the Six Nations. We're going to face Wales a little bit further down the line. We're facing Australia now.
So as a result, that might even play better into the hands of backing Samoa plus 18 points, because one eye could well be on next week's game.
Exactly. But the players have got to go out there and they've got to perform against Samoa. The Samoans are an aggressive physical side. Look around the world, look around the Premiership, see the number of Samoan players that are playing professional rugby to a very, very high standard. They've got those players playing for their team. All they need to do is get the coordination right and they could blow anyone away.
Definitely, just quick look through. I mean, Ken Peasey at 15, Johnny Leota, of course, plays in the Premiership with Sale, David Leamy, TCPC at 10, Census Johnston making his 50th appearance. There is plenty of talent on there for Samoa, and plus 18 points Samoa could be the recommendation for this weekend for an England.
I think so.
Perhaps looking to the future. Anyway, the final game of Saturday's afternoon, evening even, sees a side that are performing pretty well at the moment, worryingly well, and that is France. They're taking on Argentina. Philippe Saint-André, Jeff, recently joined Twitter. I'm not sure if Twitter's something you keep up to date with or you don't choose to, but one of his first tweets following Saturday's win was, when translated to English, "So many friends have come back after the two wins. Hashtag I'm not bitter." He's quite a character, isn't he? But nevertheless, two very good wins for France, and all of a sudden a side that seemed perhaps in disarray only a couple of months ago looks like a force again.
Yeah, well, it's amazing what you can do when you get a fly half, isn't it? You know, and that's the key for them. He's found a fly half, and he's found a bit of confidence in the French side. And the French side, when they have confidence, always play well. Good set of forwards as well. Doucetoir coming back from his injuries. He was out for most of last season, if you remember. And I think once Doucetoir's in the side, there's always that aspect of France France playing better. But the important thing for them is Lopez, the fact that they've found this fly half who can kick and can orchestrate his back line on a, if you like, a semi-stable basis. And that's been good for France. And Thomas on the wing is an amazing discovery. He's a try-scoring machine.
Superb, so, isn't he?
Yeah, it's all going well for France at the moment. But the big thing in saying that is sometimes with France, when it's all going well, it's like a train crash in slow motion. Suddenly, everything goes wrong. I can't see it happening against Argentina, to be honest. I think that Argentina did well to beat Italy last week. It was a close game. But we know that France generally are probably 10 or 15 points better than Italy in the Six Nations, sometimes even more than that. So I think this game against Argentina is probably a game that Argentina will like to run out and do well. They'll like to keep it within 15 to 20 points. And that's where I see it really finishing about 20 points in France's favour.
Four changes for France. You've got Chiocci coming in at loose head, the Toulon loose head, Benjamin Kaiser at hooker, and Vahama here in at lock. An interesting Maxime Mermoz back in the side. He'll join Wesley Fofana at centre. Inside, Wesley Fofana this weekend. And you mentioned Camille Lopez continuing at 10. Teddy Thomas will start on the wing. I have to say, I was incredibly impressed with France against Australia, Jeff. The handicap about them is minus 12 points. And we've talked about France in some detail there. I will be honest, the Italy-Argentina game, having watched that back, yes, Argentina won, and yes, it's Italy's fault for throwing it away, but I think overall Italy were actually the better side. Yes, Argentina also scored the only two tries of the game, but I think Italy looked a lot more complete and kind of threw it away, and it was more their own shortcomings that lost them the game rather than Argentina really going and winning it.
Well, Borrell has moved Italy on a lot since he took over as coach. You know, he's a French coach, isn't he? He came out of Perpignan. He's taken over the Italian role and really brought the Italian backs into play, and he expects a lot more from the Italians. The Argentinians, well, what can we say about them? We know they've got some great players. They've got players all over the world who go out there and play. They're like Samoa. They're in the Premiership, in the top 14, stuff full of Argentinian players. They've now got a professional league back home. They are probably where Italy were 5 years ago in terms of team development, and against a team like France, when France are playing well, they're a hard team to play against, and Argentina are going to have a hard weekend. I expect that, as I say, France will be close to 20 points against Argentina.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree, and as a result, I think the minus 12 about France at 10 to 11 is a bet to be looked at very seriously. Also in the winning margin lies, if you're looking at around about that 20 point mark, 16 to 20 point win in the 5 point winning margin live at 5 to 1 would also look a good
bet. Not a bad bet, 5 to 1, is it?
That's a decent price, £10 on to get 60 back. Jeff, thank you very much for your company once again. I look forward to watching all of this weekend's action, and we'll be catching up next Thursday to preview next weekend's games.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to an England win at last.
Fingers crossed.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.